Hi, this is Neve coming from the editing studio. Pardon the poor mic quality here as I record on basically my headphones. But yeah, I just wanted to let everybody know before this episode starts proper that my other podcast, Around the Long Fire, has officially moved to a Tuesday release date, which sort of works better with the Abnormal Mapping network schedule. And so kind of going to do a swap here with, this podcast moving to Thursdays. So, Ornate Cerebels going forward, like after this episode, is going to be coming out on Thursdays. So yeah, just wanted to let people know that, you know, in 2 weeks when the next episode on Showgirls comes out, it'll come out on a Thursday and will probably be Thursdays going forward, which honestly is also kind of nicer for me because Stairwells and Ghost Divers often alternates weeks. Ghost Divers is Friday, so it's like a little bit more similar time for when I have to have stuff edited and uploaded and everything. But yeah, I just want to do that update. Enjoy this wild song.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Ornate Stairwells. I'm joined, as always, by Rick.
Hello.
And we're joined this week by our guest, Nia.
You're doing the same stupid bit again.
It's funnier the second time.
For them, the first time.
It's funnier for you because this time I'm more exacerbated about it.
Yeah. Just wait till the plugs. You'll never believe what I've got coming for you in the plugs.
Oh no.
Right. I'm hosting a podcast. So we're here this week to talk about Mr. Freedom, the 1969 William Klein movie. But before that, Nia, have you watched any other movies this week?
I really wanted to last night. But then I had to record Ghost Divers again.
Mm-hmm.
So no.
I wanted to, but I was busy playing Dragon Quest IV, so I didn't. But Rick, it sounds like you had watched some movies this week.
Yeah, I have some. So like some people, I've been watching Columbo along with Totally Reprise.
I fell in behind on Columbo.
I've been doing that.
And Tenet came up on that podcast, and I had seen half of it when I was too tired to watch all of it, because that movie is a bit much if you're not able to completely pay attention to it. So then I went back to it because they started talking about it on that show, and that movie actually does rip.
I have heard this, and I'm not a Nolan person, so I have such a hard time believing it.
Yeah.
So I've liked every movie he's done since Inception a whole lot, like on another level than the ones before Inception or Inception itself, which feels like the low point of his work to me.
I fucking hate Inception. As listeners of this podcast know, I hate that movie.
And so, like, Tenet is, like, a really good time travel sci-fi action movie with two of the best leading men you could find to put in a movie.
Who's in it again?
It's Robert Pattinson and David John Washington.
Okay. John David Washington.
Yeah, John David Washington. Yeah. And they have exactly the right amount of, like, if this was an anime in the 60s, it'd be yaoi bait for people. Like, it's that kind of level. Yeah. And it ends on, like, the best, like, it's like a time trial, so it ends on the best, like, Robert Pattinson kills the final scene of this movie, and you want more of it, like, in the, like, tomorrow, basically. It's rules.
John David Washington's in a movie called The Creator that came out last year that looks fucking silly, but in, like, a way I kind of want to check it out. Also, it proudly announces from the director of Rogue One on the poster, which is, you know, I like Rogue One.
And Kenneth Branagh's here is chewing up scenery.
Oh, that's what you want him to do.
But it still has a Nolan problem where it has one of the most underwritten female characters in movies.
No way.
Yeah, no way, right? And then the second thing is everyone's talking about Dune and Dune and Dune 2. And I didn't want to go see Dune 2 because I didn't like the first one. So I instead watched the Sci-Fi Channel miniseries of Dune and Children of Dune and Dune Messiah.
Yeah.
And that's a fun time. Yes. Because I didn't remember, or they probably didn't put this on TV, but it's like, there's like a Skinemax bit to it where, like,
ooh.
Yeah, like, it's like that level of, like, oh yeah, there's some nudity in this. It was definitely not in Sci-Fi Channel in the 2000s. So it's like an unrated version of the Dune series. And then, like, it tells the story, like, pretty faithfully, but, like,
okay.
And they don't do the Lynch thing where he turns the martial arts into the sound guns.
Oh, okay. Good.
But they try to do, like, martial arts on 2000 Sci-Fi Channel budgets.
Even better.
So it's a lot of, like, people, like, badly, like, teleporting behind each other. like it's a chapter of Bleach or something. And there's some, like, weird, there's some wild casting in it. Like, like, James McAvoy's Duke Leto II, so he's the one in Children of Dune the whole time,
which okay. is
a bit distracting. And then there's, like, John Hurt's Leto, or not John Hurt, what's that guy's name? Oh, Dune Sci-Fi.
I got very excited for John Hurt as a
Duke. It's not Leto John Hurt, it's William Hurt, the other one.
Oh, okay, that's also good.
Yeah. And then, like, the guy who is in all the Guy Ritchie movies is, like, the annoy, like, the guy with the knives is, like, Gurney Halleck, so it kind of fits. A lot of stuff like that. And everyone's dressed, like, they didn't know what's, like, the thing about Dune, right, is that it is science fiction, but a lot of people take that to, like, you've seen what the Villeneuve movie looks. It looks so boring.
Mm.
But, like, these people are dressed to, like, wild degrees of, like, do I have these on my computer or on my phone? Let's find out.
You were sending me some costuming choices they made in this movie.
They look wild, and it's great. And yeah, this is fun. It was mostly just a thing to watch in the background as a TV show. That's a movie. That's a TV show. That makes me want to reread God Emperor of Dune because that's where the Dune series really gets good and picks off and goes crazy.
I know what happens in God Emperor of Dune, and
no,
I
you don't.
Yeah, that's the thing, right? Is that, like,
you know, the cover of God Emperor of Dune, which happened before God Emperor of Dune. You know what happens in that book?
Like, I'm reading Dune right now. Partly because they're reading it on Anomalous Readings. Partly because our friends Grace and Emma want to watch both Dune movies with me and Nora, once Nora finishes Dune, which I'm happy to do because otherwise I just wouldn't watch these movies. And I, like, went on the Dune wiki and, like, was like, what's Dune Messiah? Like, what happens in Dune Messiah? And I, like, read, like three sentences. I was like, that's crazy. I gotta find out what happens in Dune Messiah. What happens in Children of Dune? And I read, like, three sentences. I'm like, that's crazy. And then I read, like, three sentences of what happens in God Emperor, and I'm like, holy fuck. I gotta find out about this. That book sounds fucking weird.
It's really good.
So I'm, like, 2 hours away from the end of the Dune audiobook. The only thing that's bumming me out is that I'll have to, because in the 90s, one of my favorite audiobook narrators did an audiobook of Dune, but he didn't do the rest of the series, and so now I'll have to switch over to a guy I like considerably less for the rest of them. But I will survive. I will cope. I will live with the Scott Brick in my life, you know?
Yeah.
It is funny because, as all people are obligated to do, this audiobook narrator for Dune, he voices Baron Harkonnen like this because he's fat, because he's evil.
Yeah. Yeah, that is still a true thing.
Oh, I was unprepared for Stellan Skarsgård, Baron Harkonnen, which I Googled just now.
And if you're listening to this and you want more Dune, you should go listen to Dune University on the Expert Audio.
You should.
That show is incredible, and I wish more than anything for them to have more episodes, but I get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I get it. I miss Dune University.
They use the song with, oh, god damn.
If you walk without rhythm, they won't attract the worm.
They use it so well in that show. It's so... Anyways. And the
I
last thing I watched...
exportaud.io/Dune. If not, it's /Duneversity for sure. So
it's very good. And anyways, the last thing I watched is a documentary from 2013 called Mirage Men, which ties into the X-Files thing we talked about. We'll talk about in the future for listeners. It's a documentary about Richard Doty mostly. Do you either of you know who that is?
Nope.
So he's a guy
I've heard
who
the name, but I don't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, he's a guy who worked for the government, and then in this documentary is now a private citizen, and he claims that he was hired and paid by the government to go to people who are interested in UFOs and to take them around and show them government planted things about UFOs to muddy the waters about what they were actually doing out there in the desert.
Okay.
Yeah. So the documentary is a lot of him talking about all these things that he was doing. Like, he would fly people out to, like, wreckage they planted in a mountain range and then with a helicopter, and, like, have the guys see the wreckage as they're flying over it. And then it talks to a lot of people about him doing this. And also, there's a bit where they're at a UFO convention, and one of the people he talked to goes up on stage and tells that to the room. And look... If you reveal in the middle of your big show that half of this information comes from the government, maybe it might have a throw wrench into things. It's really incredible.
Oh my god. This sounds like a good version of Room 237.
And then there's still, like, the thing that you'll get, right, is because it's a guy from the government saying that I fed them all this information so that, because the end result, they go into this in the movie a bit, is that if you want to develop a program where you can fly unmanned drones to bomb people, you need a place to test that before you can get it off the ground for lots of years. So why not invent this thing? And also there's bits where, like, the person he did this, like, he talked to a lot is, like, got so into it that he got a bit off of it, like, in his personal life, and, like, it threw his whole life off, and it's sad in a lot of ways. But yeah, it's okay. Like, It's like a really, it's an interesting take, because there's another documentary in that movie who, like, got, like, led on a wild ride by this guy, all this fake information. It's wild. And then, but it's a government conspiracy, so there's still people in the end who are like, but is it true? It's really fun. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this is all a cover-up for there are aliens.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's a cover-up inside of a cover-up inside of a cover-up.
Ah, X-Files.
And the guy doesn't seem to... He doesn't understand the ways that he was, like, manipulating these people. Like, even outside of being a government agent, he doesn't understand the levels to which he was just fucking with people. I don't think. It's wild. Very delusional person.
Mr. Freedom?
Yeah, sure.
Well, first I need some stairwells ratings from Rick.
Oh, yes. Sure.
The Palace of Irakeen has some really big ass staircases, but they're just big ass staircases on a palace for the Dune thing.
Yeah.
And then Tenet is a movie about bungee jumping into tall buildings that don't have stairs.
Yeah.
So it sounds like we're getting an F for Tenet. Does the ornateness of the stairs alone, like, what's the...
Does it give, like, really an ornate, A, actually, or is it like a B or something?
It's like outside... It's not really. It's like the staircase. It's a big staircase. It's like a really big staircase up to the palace, but it's not like anything special.
Okay.
Yeah.
That sounds like a B to me.
Yeah. And then Mirage Man's in like hotel rooms in like Los Angeles. So.
Sounds like another F for Mirage.
Yeah.
are there different stairs in Children of the Dune? Am I?
No, it's the same stairs.
Yeah.
Okay.
One more thing about that miniseries. They have to, so the whole thing, spoilers briefly for Children of Dune going forward. He turns into a worm is the whole plot of the end of that book, mm-hmm. slowly. And they need to depict him being able to move across the sand like a worm. So he basically runs like the Flash does on the TV show for like half of that movie. Yeah. Like very terribly. And it's so funny. yeah, but now Mr. Freedom.
Oh, one of the director on the Dune series was one of Romero's proteges. Okay. Oh, he worked on Creepshow and okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out where I knew this name from. The executive producer on Diary of the Dead, a movie that I still think is fine.
Oh, is he executive producer for Dune and Dune Part 2?
He is. Interesting. I'm surprised they would have brought that guy back, but
he's got a passion for Dune.
Who doesn't?
Dune, your mom. Anyway.
Shut up.
Sorry, I had to. It was right there.
We're here to talk about Mr. Freedom, which is, like I mentioned earlier, I can't remember if it's 1968 or 1969, but it is it's
68.
French-American sort of, it's a movie made in France by an American guy, about, a superhero named Mr. Freedom, who mostly goes around giving really empty speeches and then shooting people or occasionally throwing them off of buildings. And he is called to France because he has to investigate communist insurgency, led by, Mujik Man and a Chinese character whose name I do not feel comfortable saying on the podcast.
That's before the other words that he has for this character.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that in this movie. Yeah. Huh?
There's a lot of because Mr. Freedom's deal is that he is a white nationalist. And so there's a lot of him saying slurs that is just like acceptable in 60s satire and parody in a way that it would not be. Now and probably
acceptable, like in scare quotes, but like culturally, more culturally allowed as part of satire.
Yes, exactly. But yeah, so he's going to France to upset this plot by the Russians and the Chinese, and basically, you're either for the USA or against the USA, and if you are against the USA, he gives himself license to kill you.
And there are the undecideds, but it's really important to convert all of the undecideds to the USA.
Yes.
James W. Studies voice, 1968.
And like the plot is pretty thin, but like he has this woman he befriends, this Bond girl he befriends, Marie Madeline, who
she had red hair, and I was immediately like, she's the spy.
Yeah, she is like a communist spy, and she betrays him, and through the betrayal, and through various escalations, basically Mr. Freedom decides, well, I'll just blow up half of France, give them an ultimatum, they don't surrender, and so he blows up the rest of France. And because it would be preferable to blow up the entire country than for it to be, communist, because 1968.
Yeah.
This movie is really funny and really stupid. And the thing that got to me about this movie most is not the way that it's like satirizing American politics, but the way that it's satirizing like how superheroes become enmeshed with the military industrial complex in 1968, you know, like decades before the MCU actually happens.
So,
I mean, we also started this, and I was like, this is kind of Team America, but from like late 60s, early 70s, which does make it better, but also does mean that, like Team America, I still just like wore thin on its premise when it 90 minutes felt too long to me. My thing.
Yeah.
I would love to read two or three comic book floppies about this and be like, yeah, that, okay. I see what you were doing.
Yeah.
So I first saw this in 2012 after I saw The Avengers.
Oh, shit.
Which is the perfect time to see it because it was right around when they were promoing that second Captain America movie, and I was like, this is a 70s spy movie, and I just seen this movie, and it's like, okay, sure. And the
Joss
thing about
Whedon found dead in Miami.
Yeah, this is also, like, to put into perspective, this is 4 years after Captain America came back in Marvel Comics.
Right, like, Spider-Man and, the Fantastic Four are, like, in their heyday, but, like, the Avengers are barely a thing at this point. You know?
And Captain America just come back. Yeah, it's wild. Also, like, the thing I noticed more about this movie is, like, the people that have seen it and the people that have not. So, like, the opening bit where he's getting his costume on, it's all, like, White Ellen in the cupboard. That's just a comedian's thing from The Watchmen.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of that. And, like, I love how it opens on, like, it goes from actual riot footage into the movie.
The way they use stock footage in this is, I thought was really cool, of just, like, you know, mashing together actual protests with, you know, this silly nonsense.
Yeah.
There's a bit during the rally he holds in France where they do, like, they have their own version of the Parallax Views, like, brainwashing video, but it's just, like, advertisements and, like, what's great about America for 20 seconds. It's great.
When he's just like, I'm going to show you what you're missing by being in France instead of America. And it's just like an assault on the senses.
It also just immediately starts with like Native Americans drinking Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
Sending those in.
Yes.
I should be noted too.
There were people here. We gave them Coke.
William Klein is a fashion guy. And you might be able to tell that from the fact that he designed this movie also instead of directing it. As well as directing it. Yeah.
Speaking of that first rally scene, it's really funny because it's been established at this point that, like, Mr. Freedom's deal is that he's a white nationalist. But there is someone in the audience with just, like, a fashionable purple KKK getup.
Which it's is wild.
And it's like, I know that in Spain specifically, there is, like, a thing where, like, that's that the KKK outfits are taken from. There's this like religious ceremony thing that is practiced mostly in Spain, but in other parts of Europe as well. But that wasn't what this was doing.
Yeah.
This was, look at my nice purple KKK outfit. I also just like, speaking of that rally, that was where it really hammered home for me. There's a lot of really good, long takes in this movie. Like, when you're walking into the rally, she just, like, Marie Madeline is introducing Mr. Freedom to all of their, like, French operatives. And she's like, here's this guy. And, you know, and then it's like walking through the crowd. Here's that guy. Here's this guy. And they're like I say, they're just walking. And there's just, like, this really long take for no reason. There was another one earlier in the hotel where, like, they're having a long conversation and, like, he's walking right behind this window washer, and like at the end of the shot, he just throws the window washer out the
like window washer like moves to be obscured, and then he just grabs an obvious dummy from like there and throws it off the. Yeah.
That's so, such a funny scene.
Yeah, he just keeps killing everyone.
Yeah,
like, everywhere he goes.
The other one where he lands in France, and he's walking to his hotel, and he walks past, I believe it's a Japanese family taking a picture in front of the Eiffel Tower.
Yes.
and he judo chops the guy in the back of the neck and takes his camera and walks away.
And the family starts screaming and crying.
There's also just like rapid fire chaos happening where like there's like a car that almost crashes into somebody.
Yeah.
There's like he like steals something from somebody else. Like
he just like pulls up in front of the hotel and doesn't mind if a pedestrian gets hit.
the opening scene is him getting called to break into a black family's house as they're having dinner and like shoot one of them and then have them all sing a song before he leaves.
And then, like, shoots the rest of them.
Yeah.
And I think he is just, like, a police officer at the very beginning.
Yeah,
when he
gets
the call and then goes and changes into his, like, just football outfit, basically.
Yeah.
It's hiding behind a giant American flag, too.
Yeah. Man deep-throating a hoagie.
Yes.
He does throw the entire
fucking sandwich in his mouth at once.
Yeah.
The poster on the door into his back room is a wanted poster for John F. Kennedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
I noticed that poster, and the other one I noticed is that in the scene with Marie Madeline's apartment, she just has a poster of Hitler on her wall. You know? Also in that scene, Mr. Freedom is shirtless and he just has the Iron Eagle like tattooed on his chest, and it's like, okay.
This movie is kind of like if there was a Zucker's Brothers movie that was anti-imperialist.
I feel like this movie is like if somehow RoboCop were less subtle, you know? that was kind of where my mind went.
It's mostly just a lot of like bits and amazing like reveals. Like so, the one I always think about is when Super Frenchman lifted down from the ceiling.
Yes.
Oh yeah. the weird inflatables throughout this.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the like Chinese villain is just a person in like a big like fucking used car salesman balloon that's just like a red lion sort of dragon thing, you know?
And the French man is a big wavy arm tube man basically.
Yes. Yeah. And he, like, talks through, like, an intercom, and he's like, I'm Super Frenchman. there's also the bit where, there's the fucking bit where, Mr. Freedom goes to confront Mujik Man, and midway through their conversation, Jesus and Mary show up, and they have like one line, and then they're just hanging out for the rest of the scene.
And also, in a way that felt like it should be more climactic to what this movie is, I think that Mr. Freedom briefly waves a gun at Jesus.
Yes.
Which I feel like just...
he's just kind of pointing the gun wildly, and for a brief moment, the 45 like passes over Jesus, and I'm like, what is happening?
There's like so many like that's the thing about this movie is it's more like bits than a plot.
Yes, absolutely. And like the satire part of it comes through really early on of like, oh yeah, America, if you buy into this idea of like American pride and freedom, it's more like a cult than actual like belief in any sort of ideal. And then it's just 90 minutes of jokes all on that.
There's also, so that bit right at the start where he goes to Freedom headquarters, there's that lady in the reception area who runs over to him, and the way she talks sounds like Harley Quinn.
Yes!
Like, Mr. Freedom!
There's also, it's fucking Donald Pleasance is his handler. Yes.
Who is like in a brief cameo. Also, not gonna lie, I thought he was Wyndham Earle like half the time he was showing up. And I, like, he talks that way in most of this movie. Yeah.
He does, kinda.
Yeah. There were definitely some good bits in this. I do wish it had more of a plot. And it had the thing that a lot of, like, this kind of satire will have for me, which is just, like, one, in doing the satire, we're also kind of just doing the thing.
Uh-huh.
And at a certain point, the satire, like, I just wanted to start doing more with the satire, and it felt like it was like, okay, yeah, I see what the satire is.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like I would have been higher on this movie if they trimmed it down to be, like, an hour long. But
And yeah, like, it's so easy to cut things because, like, everything is just kind of, like, random scenes. The fucking bit where all the... So there's the first rally where all of the French, like, freedom operatives are in, like some sort of community meeting space sort of thing.
It's like the high school gym, and they get up on the little auditorium that's in the high school gym, because the high school gym has to be five different things at a high school.
The second time he goes to rally the troops, all of the French freedom people are, like, naked and fighting and covered in blood and mud, and, like, one woman is just, like, getting waterboarded continuously, and, like, it's just like, what's going on? And it's, like, in this, like, fucking weird-ass abandoned warehouse. And I'm just like, what the fuck is happening? And then Mr. Freedom is, like, starting to make them, like, a sales pitch on, like, weapons, and they're like, here's the exploding pen. And they, you know, it's fucking, like, James Bond shit.
We forgot to mention that when Mr. Freedom gets, so he, when, with the, like, Chinese operative and the Russian operative, while confronting them, just backs up into a sign and knocks himself out and gets a concussion. And then does seem to be just deeply concussed for, like, a large part of the movie that follows.
Yes!
Especially because he gets a concussion. They immediately have him go to sleep. Just, like, sleep it off. He then has vigorous sex, which I also think is probably not ideal if you have a concussion. And then goes to sleep again. And then he wakes up, and it turns out that the antenna in his tooth that's sending him the freedom waves has been replaced by the communist one. And he's being brainwashed by communism. And it gives him the stigmata.
Yes.
Oh, there's also a part of that where he comes on the roof and and shoots that lady because she's red. That looks just, this movie also just looks incredible at times.
Yeah, there's, like, because it's, like, so, like, you know, kind of like you said, fashion forward, there's just some really stunningly good images for how stupid the movie is. There's also, so he gets the stigmata, and then the Marie Madeleine fills up a bowl with an entire box of cornflakes, and then it has the biggest spoon ever and is just shoving cornflakes in his mouth. It's one of the most unpleasant things I've ever seen in a movie.
And he's like, not too much milk, it'll get soggy.
But she pours the milk in this bowl that's more of a plate than a bowl, and it just, like, splashes all over him, and then there's just, like, cornflakes in his mouth again and again, and there's, like, clearly times where the actor is still chewing, and she'll, like, put another spoonful in his mouth.
It's like the phenomenon of, like, if you're on TikTok and you're scrolling, sometimes you'll fall into the weird part of TikTok where you're like, this is not porn, but it's shot like it's porn. It's shot like this is porn to somebody, but I don't understand what's happening, because it's just like a woman, like, making a stupid, like, food thing while a man, like, gives her instructions. And you're like, what the fuck has happened?
Also,
it did have a bit of that vibe.
There are two bits that we have hasn't really come up. Is one of them, he goes to the U.S. Embassy in France, which is a supermarket.
Yes.
It's a Walmart where the guy has a big tour of the Walmart where the guy's explaining how protesters can protest, but not that much.
And there are the cheerleaders that are just, like, following them around, bouncing the whole time.
Yes.
And they just have to keep pretending like it's not happening. I saw it happening and I was like, now if you rewind it and watch it again, and watch carefully, you'll see that actually a man in a gorilla costume comes in.
It's also funny because it's, like, it's another one of those, like, really long takes, as he's just, you know, the ambassador is giving this long monologue about, like you say, like, well, we allow them to protest, but only as long as they vote the right way or whatever it is, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, these women just have to keep bouncing, and by the end of the shot, you can see that some of them are just very tired and want to stop bouncing.
And the other one is when they're driving there, Madeleine tells them that they've, like, basically made the sex work industry in France to, like, work for freedom industries.
Yes. I forgot about that.
And there's a phone call where I believe it's wanted for a right wing person, like a 15-year-old girl or something.
Yeah, yeah. It's like she's listening to the police scanner, which is just like putting out calls for like specific types of sex workers, and it's like right wing intellectual, maximum age of 15, and it's like oof.
Yeah.
Come on.
There's also the part where they do the dental work to replace the antenna, and I like as somebody who like has feelings about dental, there's actual dust coming off of them. They put an actual drill onto his tooth.
Yes,
they actually briefly drill his tooth in this movie, and it hit me.
And then he gets up and like fucking karate chops the dentist. Yeah, he's like no witnesses.
There is a weird French New Wave energy to some of this stuff with the long takes, too, because, like, sometimes people talk about, oh, you know, is that really long take? And it's, like, elaborately planned out action. And the French New Wave long take is not that. It's just, like, we have various shit we're going to walk to and somebody's going to, like, say a thing, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It's more like, hey, we don't have to set up lighting multiple times if we just keep walking while we do this monologue.
And especially with, so there's some parts where the anti-freedom, the French anti-freedom people are attacking the like headquarters for Mr. Freedom and everybody. Where there's some stuff where like people are like going to the little teleporter or whatever as well. And they just do like the French New Wave thing of just like, we can just like cut. We can just like put some cuts in here to speed it up.
Yeah.
And I saw that and I was like, you needed to do this more. But yeah.
I keep going back to the bit. There's also the bit where he goes to his bathrobe's also really incredible. The giant eagle on the back.
Oh God. Yeah. With the big fucking eagle on the back of it.
Yeah. When he wakes up and the room service is there and it's poison, so he has the lady eat it first, and she's, like, trying not to.
Only is it poison, but also he's, like, strip first, then eat the poison.
And then, like, he even seems slightly taken aback about how into the strip first she is.
Yeah, she's like, oh, okay, I get to fuck Mr. Freedom.
And also does that cut, too, there, where she, like, eats it, and then is, like, dying, and then it cut, and she'll die. It's really jerky that way. It's cool. And then there's another guy in there, and he leaves, and the maid's there for the bodies.
I love the face the maid makes when she comes in and sees the two corpses. Yeah.
It's also mostly like, yeah, the reason I think about this movie a lot is that it is in 1968, and considering where we are now, it's so wild.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of this stuff that, like, you know, you mentioned Team Freedom or Team America earlier. I always think of, like, this sort of thing as a, like, post 9/11 sort of way of thinking. And I know that's not true. Like, yeah. I know that people were, like, in the cult of America before that.
I'm old enough to know that the 9/11 stuff was specifically being like, man, we had it so great when we could just, like, talk about the Reds and, like, the commie threat.
Right.
How do we get that energy back?
Right.
We gotta start some sort of new war to make people afraid.
Yeah. And so, like, yeah, like, seeing this movie and being like, right, this is the perennial problem. This has always been there. It's nice, you know, to realize that your problems are not new.
And there is also a thing with this movie where it is one of those ones where you could just watch it, and every time you watch it, you'll see, like, another thing. Like, I just noticed this time, they spend a lot of time on the elevator buttons when he goes up to Freedom headquarters, and it's exactly the five companies you think it'd be.
I remember seeing one of the companies being like, oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
United Fruit. I remember
Texaco,
seeing
Texaco, Shell, Aramco, United Fruit, Unilever.
I remember seeing United Fruit, and I was like, that's good. That's actually, United Fruit is way more evil than Freedom Inc. could ever be.
It's kind of like also like the right kind of like it kind of like disperses at the end instead of having like a big like successful climax, because it just kind of everything explodes.
The bit right before the end where they're like, okay, we need to launch Cold War where we try to demoralize the population. Yeah. And so most of the Freedom people are just running around breaking things, and like Mr. Freedom is just on the rooftop with a submachine gun just firing into a crowd. Like, oh, we're demoralizing them. Ba-ba-ba-ba-bam.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, like you say, like, they just, they, like, kind of reach a climax, and then he just blows up this massive bomb that seems to explode. I think he thinks it blows up all of France, and then the other guy is
Dr. Freedom.
Dr. Freedom is like, no, only most of France.
Yeah. I didn't give you the big one, I gave you the medium one, and we, like, see, like, those protest shots are still happening.
You're right.
Yeah. I also love how that camera footage is never, it's, there's always video effects on top of it, Dr. Freedom talking.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We were joking that there's, like, they've got some AV tech in the back just during all of those scenes, just fiddling with, like, dials and switches messing up the TV.
Yeah.
The one at the start where he talks to him in, like, five different screens is so wild to watch because it's just, like, it's just going crazy.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, it's all the blue, now it's all the green or whatever, and it's like looping, and yeah, it's clearly just somebody, like, I almost wonder if someone just is like grabbing the cathode ray tube and turning it back there or some shit.
No, they just have a professional grade CRT and they're messing with all the settings.
Yeah.
I've messed with those same settings.
But there isn't like a last fight with the villain, it's just like, they're in like a control room deciding targets to bomb while everyone cheers.
Yes. They're like, Versailles. And then you cut to like stock footage of like Versailles blowing up.
Yeah.
Except I don't think they do Versailles. I think they do like this famous bridge, because you can just get like footage of a bridge blowing up and like the audience will be like, oh yeah, that's that famous bridge.
And, yeah. Important question. Which is your favorite look?
Oh God. This guy right beside Mr. Freedom to his left, he's got an umpire thing on, and he's got a big red, like, hat that has, like, red and white, like, spider legs coming down it. I kept looking at him and thinking he was Bill Hader. Anyway, my favorite is the rainbow flag Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that are in the background.
Yeah. I kind of hated these hats with the weird metal bars.
There's also that woman there who's just wearing like the Mickey like Mouse a ears? Really skimpy fucking outfit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mr. Freedom also gets like a fucking, he's got like a still suit going on in these last scenes, cuz he's got some sort of tube coming out from his helmet to his mouth for some
reason.
Well,
the big reveal
is
he's a robot, right?
Right. Yeah. I forgot already that he's a robot.
Yeah, his arm comes
it's
off.
A RoboCop.
It's a robot arm.
Yeah.
Which I thought in like the first 5 minutes, I'm like, oh, I wonder if this guy's a robot, because I was just thinking about RoboCop, and then I kind of forgot about it for the rest of the movie. And so then when his arm pops off, I'm like, he's a robot.
And then his doctor's like, don't worry about it.
Yeah. The doctor's like, oh, just put the arm back on, and he does. And that doesn't fix the part where he's fucking dying.
Yeah.
And it's just Donald Pleasance just doing a little dance to the stupid song they've been singing the whole movie.
Yeah.
The song is really stupid.
It's really stupid.
But I think it's like the right level of stupid where someone will sing it loudly at you and you'll be like groaning the whole time.
How were the stairs in Mr. Freedom?
Yeah, there are a number.
There is the stairs from the weird warehouse that
oh yeah.
There's
he goes up some stairs when he's calling in the final big bomb strike.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's on like a one of those like plants that they always film at. Yeah, yeah.
There's also some like sewer tunnel stairs or subway tunnel stairs when he's going down to see Mujik Man. I didn't think those were that remarkable. I want to say like a C+ for stairs in this, because they had some nice looking ones, but they didn't really make an impression on me, you know? Oh, and we forgot to do stairs for Lola last time.
Yeah.
Were there any stairs in Lola? I don't particularly remember any.
So there's the stairs there's like the spiral stairs, but they're nothing like the...
No.
They're nothing like the Blue Angel ones, but they go up to like where the American soldier lives.
Right.
In his house.
Right. Okay.
And then
there's like
also kind
of
the
those.
Ladder that goes up into the loft in like the little barn area. Yeah.
Oh, have either of you ever worn one of the the sumo suits that Mujik Man's wearing?
No.
No.
Because they sometimes have those at like fairs or parks where you could like, there's two of them and you could wear them. Like, I know me and my brother have done it once where you both put them on and then you like jump at each other basically. It's weird. Yeah, he's basically wearing a big rubber suit.
I feel like Lola is like a D, especially just given that it's pulling from the Blue Angel and it doesn't really do any. Yeah.
So D for stairs there. And then next week, or I don't know, 2 weeks from now?
We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Showgirls is our next movie. So by, is this before or after Basic Instinct? I think it's after, right?
I don't actually remember. Because they're both 90s.
Speaking of RoboCop,
after Basic
Instinct. Mr. Verhoeven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, Basic Instinct is 92, so then it's Showgirls is probably his next movie. There might be one in between, but...
Autumn, have you seen Flesh and Blood?
Yes, Nora and I watched it. I liked it, Nora did not like it very much. I thought it was weird and interesting, but there was, like, a little something missing that kind of would have brought it over the top for me. But Nora was just, like, bored.
There's also the bits where you're like, oh, that's a Berserk thing.
Yeah. That was for me, like, half the fun of watching it is like, oh, Berserk.
Man, the run of Basic Instinct, Showgirls, Star Troopers, Hollow Man, it's a good run.
I haven't seen Hollow Man. I also haven't seen Starship Troopers, so.
Wait, really?
No. It's, like, Nora's favorite movie, I think, and I have not seen it. I think we were talking about doing Starship Troopers for franchise at some point, so.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my final thought on Mr. Freedom is, like, as I've said, I think it went on a little bit too long. I think also the nature of this kind of satire is there's a lot of, like, making fun of the thing, but there's no, like, real answer to it. Mm-hmm. Like, the most that this has is the images of people protesting, but that's kind of, like, just a vague answer to what this is.
Yeah.
Where I think I've always preferred the, like, other side of this, where, like, even Throw Away Your Books, Rally in the Streets is really concerned with the disillusionment of just people and, like, not having a sense of what to do. But it still starts to provide some, like, various other things to focus
true.
On. So, whereas this is kind of, like, there was a point at which I was like, yeah, America sucks. please do funny bits again. That will make me laugh.
Well, Nia, since you're our guest this week, do you want to do your plugs first? I'm not going to break. I think you think that I'm going to break. Do your fucking plugs.
Isn't talking during it breaking?
Fuck!
So anyways, you can find me at FoxOmnia on Twitter and any other social media platform I'm on, but especially Twitter. When I did GGP, recorded GGP, I said you can find me on Twitter. I think having just a reaction to, like, don't go to Twitter, Jackson was like, I would not do that. And I was like, what? but yeah, you can find me on Twitter. Also, go listen to my other podcasts. Ornate Stairwells is what we're doing. I've recorded two podcasts today.
Well, you're usually on Coffee and Comic Books with me.
Yes, there is a certain amount to which I feel like I'm on Coffee and Comic Books right now. Especially as you keep doing this whole guest bit. But anyways, go listen to Ghost Divers where we're doing Nana. Listen to... Around the Long Fire, about to start Mort d'Arthur. By the time this is out, we've started it, I'm sure. I don't know exactly how the release schedules for this is going to line up, but...
Yeah.
And, you know, listen to Pondering Putan with Aji Shirotaro and Hachimitsu Boy. It's a comedy podcast where we don't talk about the comic that much, but it is a comic podcast. But also, I still believe in my heart that we are always kind of talking about Cromartie High School, even when we're not.
Rick, where can people find you?
You can find me also on Coffee and Comic Books on the Expert Audio Podcast Network.
Since I've got you here, I was going to edit the next episode of Coffee and Comic Books later on today, but I can't remember right now. I put up the second Finder episode.
Uh-huh.
Is it then the third Finder episode and then Cages? Or is it
yes.
Cages? Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Last week was Cages. Week yes. before was Finder.
Yeah. And then
we just did Finder because it didn't work out to do the one with Nora, right? Is that what it was?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, but yeah.
Well, yeah, you can guess. Find me on Twitter at @autumnal_coffee, co-host at @autumnalcoffee. Like I say, the third Finder episode of Coffee and Comic Books will be up soon. After that, we'll have Cages, where we were joined by Nia. That'll be a free episode.
And then
we got some more Cages, some more Finder, and probably some other stuff coming up soon on there. So
yeah.
I'm pretty sure that the third Finder episode will be up before this, because it'll take me, like, you know, 20 minutes to edit, so I'll just get that done today. Anyway. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.
Nanahachi is real.
Nanahachi is real.
Nanahachi is real.
Thank you.
Bela Lugosi is dead.
It's the non-homophobia zone. I'm Autumn. I'm joined, as always, by Rick.
Hello.
And I guess we have Nia guesting this time.
When is this going?
I just needed a bit. I just, you know, we're just vibing. We're in the zone. I got nothing to talk about in the non-homophobia zone because we did this like 3 days
ago.
Yeah,
the problem with this, the way that this worked out, especially with like having to delay the other stairwells recording, is we recorded Thursday, and then Friday I recorded Ghost Divers.
Uh-huh.
And then that recording was lost. I won't say who lost the recording, but
I'll say that Connor lost it.
And so we had to re-record yesterday on my birthday, where if that didn't happen, we may have like watched a movie or something in addition to Mr. Freedom.
Yeah.
But instead, I just recorded, and then we watched Mr. Freedom, and then I was fucking tired.
Yeah.
So
that's fair. We also podcasted this morning also.
Yeah, and then I woke up, had breakfast, and then did Great Gundam Project.
This is the last podcast of the weekend, though. So, yeah.
The main thing that I've done since we last recorded Stairwells is I played a little more Etrian Odyssey. That's about it. It's truly, and like I had a birthday, you know? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How was your birthday? You doing anything fun?
I mean, it was still, like, my kid had swim class, so took my kid to swim class while Emily got ready to go on the train. Drove them to the train station, and she had forgotten to set her navigation thing to, like, allow highways. So we just took, like, one road really far down, like, just back road. Like, not back roads because it's the city, but, like, like a normal street.
You took, like, Ashland all the way to downtown or whatever.
Yeah. And then on the way back, I was like, well, let's just see what Google Maps says. And it was like, oh, go to Lakeshore Drive. And I was like, yeah, that makes sense. And so I started doing that, and Google Maps was wrong. Don't go to Lakeshore Drive because it was the fucking Shamrock Shuffle or whatever. We already had the parade, not St. Patrick's Day. And then there was St. Patrick's Day the next weekend where everyone was getting drunk in the streets. We have to do another fucking weekend of St. Patrick's. I'm Irish and I'm pissed off about this. This is American St. Patrick's Day just kind of sucks. I don't know a single person who's like actually Irish who cares about St. Patrick's Day this way.
No.
But so it took me, normally that drive would be like a half hour, and it took me well over an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Well over an hour.
Yeah.
So I was also just grumpy, getting back way later than I intended, recording Ghost Divers, eating some dinner, watching the movie, and then going to bed. And then waking up to record a podcast. So truly, I haven't done that much. But the cake that my wife made me was basically the Nana cake, but with almond cake instead of just like normal sponge cake, because it's like a Japanese strawberry shortcake. And I love almond cake.
Yeah.
So that was cute. That was nice.
Yeah, I had some. It was very good.
I've like built a little bit of the second Fox Lego set where I'm doing the owl option instead.
How about you, Rick? What have you been up to this week?
This week, not a lot. Work's early these days, so work's tiring. And then I've been tearing apart the next issue to scan for the anime stuff I'm doing, which is fun.
Hell yeah.
But it's also fun because I didn't realize this is the one where High Streamer starts.
High Streamer, I know this.
It's the story that becomes Charles Counterattack.
Oh, it's okay. Written by Tom Noh and
drawn by Hoshino,
Okay.
It's also the issue where they have a suspicious long segment where Miyazaki and Takahata are like walking around pastoral countryside. And you're like, wait, what's going on here? And the next issue's cover is Totoro. So you're like, oh, okay. It's fun.
How far, how many issues do you have that you still haven't even scanned?
So I don't tell people this a lot because it's fun to keep the surprise. But I have all of 87 and then five of... So the last issue I have has Kaneda walking up to his bike.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's June 88.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's an interesting problem. I don't know how far I'm going to go because it does get up there money-wise.
Yeah, I bet.
I might just try to fill in the stuff I haven't gotten from like the other years, but yeah. And I don't know how much I care about anime after Akira comes out anymore. I've hit all of, like, I guess there's Victory Gundam is the next thing that would come up that I'd care about. But that's like 93, so that's like 6 years after where I am. So, like, no thank you.
Right, like, what happens makes sense.
I guess there's, like, Oshi stuff in the middle of that. Like, Palabor starts happening.
Yeah, when did Ghost in the Shell come out? 91?
Yeah, that's all later. Oh no, 89. Yeah, they probably start yapping all that stuff. But yeah, I don't know how much I care about like 90 or like that specific 2 years of anime. Like, what happens in 89 and 90?
I guess Pat Labor was running from.
Yeah,
well,
sure.
That's the manga. I guess Pat Labor was running around these times, and
it'd be like Mononoke Heavy, right? Yeah, that too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. God.
Because this magazine, like, worships the ground that guy walks on.
When did Mononoke come out? Was that, like, 96? I want to say it was, like, later in the 90s.
Oh, it might have been. Was there... Wait. Yeah, because it goes to Totoro and Bear the Fireflies, and then...
Yeah. Yeah, 97. 97 for Mononoke. Yeah. I should have known, because that's, like, the one that's got, like, their first attempts at CG, which are fucking terrible.
And I've been trying not to play as much Balatro as I have been playing, but holy god, that game is good.
I have not bought that game because I know it'll destroy my life.
And then you get, like... And then you start getting close on YouTube where it's like, oh yeah, my score got to like 2.9 e to the 35. And it's like, what is going on in this card game?
I downloaded Vampire Survivors again this week. And then I've had to, like, what I've been doing is uninstalling it between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. and then reinstalling it again. Because, like, there was one day where I was just playing it at work and I'm like... I got noticeably less work done today than on days before I had Vampire Survivors on my phone. I gotta do something about this. I finished Nana this week, or yesterday, I guess. I was chatting with you, Nia, this morning about, like, oh, what should I read next? I believe you said, well, I want you to read, like, Neighborhood Story or Paradise Kiss, but you should probably read...
Or just, like, something romance.
Yeah.
You know? Just something more my wheelhouse about manga. But I was like, I'm going to say another thing that I like and that you're far more likely to read.
Crying Freeman.
Yeah. Yes.
Which I do have on my tablet already. And I was like, right! I've been wanting to read Crying Freeman forever! Let's do that!
So what'd you think of Nana? We can also do this on Coffee and Comic Books, but
I mean, I liked Nana a lot. I thought that the last two volumes were the best two volumes in a lot of ways. I had some of the same struggles with Nana that you have with Berserk, where, like, I can recognize the, like, absolute mastery that the mangaka has over the form. And also, it's just not my wheelhouse, and so I'm like, this is an extremely, extremely good romance manga. When is someone going to punch? But I thought the last two, were particularly good, in part because,
Yazawa Ai punches specifically you.
Well, also, it just reads so fast. Nana can sometimes be a slow read because there's just, like, a density to what's happening on the page. Those last two volumes, like, I read in, like, 45 minutes. Like, I just blew right through them. So, I think it's, like, a really good ending. Like, it's obviously setting up the next real final arc of the story, but this being, like, you know, this is the ending of this arc of the story, and if we never got the next arc, I would be perfectly satisfied with this ending, you know?
Yeah.
Life simply moves on, you know?
Yeah.
For better and for worse.
And it, like, gives you the pieces to, like, kind of understand what's happening in the future.
Yeah, like, Nana will meet up again.
There's still questions about, like, exactly what happened and result and everything.
Yeah.
You also can kind of understand the things that could potentially happen.
She could do, like, one more volume that's, like, and then Nana came back to Japan and Hachi divorced Takumi and everything worked out, and it would, like, I would have filled in everything that happened that she didn't already tell us, you know? Like, it's not hard.
Yeah.
I think such a simplistic happy ending, like, isn't quite what the manga is building to, and, or if it is, like, in some ways, I like this extremely fucking sad ending better, you know? But I think
it'll probably, my guess is it would build to a happier ending. But that ending is still going to be, I think it's going to have the same energy of the final volume of, like, people, like, deeply struggling, but, like, just admitting that they need to, like, lean on each other.
Yeah, like, yeah. I could see her doing a, and this is saying a lot, an even better version of, like, the Ikkoku Nikki ending, where it is a happy ending, but it's also a really sad ending, you know? Yeah. It is nice to have it done, and now I feel like I can get back into reading more other comics not to be like, and now I've got that taken care of. Fuck you.
It's almost like Em and I have been saying, just like reading it normally instead of dragging it out over multiple years at this point would actually like give you a, like let you just like experience the thing and have a feeling about it and then do other stuff.
I mean, in the middle of there, I was just, you know, reading X-Men, having a great time. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
There's a lot of comics to read is a thing.
There's so many comics to read.
I've also been watching X-Files, which is fun.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that because, like, I was kind of wanting a new, like, kind of empty calorie show to watch, and X-Files or going back to DS9 were kind of top of the list for me.
Yeah, because I always saw, like episodes here and there when I was younger, but I've never actually just watched it through.
Mm-hmm.
It's so funny how many, like, just, like, there's the Thing episode. There's, like, a bunch of just, like, you're just like, oh, yeah, here's a movie. We're just going to take that and borrow some actors and do the thing.
I mean, that's what I'd be doing if I were writing the X-Files. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Truly, the X-Files is the pinnacle of, like, what do you mean you're tired of Monster of the Week? There's a new monster every week.
<for sure. laughs>
Because when they try and do a continuous story in the X-Files, like whenever it goes to like, here's the ongoing plot, you're like, this is so much worse. Just give me a new fucking monster. I don't give a shit about the weird alien extended subplot you have going. Just show me a weird guy who can bend his body into strange shapes to like go all through pipes and shit.
I was thinking about this. Sorry, Rick.
Is I like the guys they get for the conspiracy. Like all the evil smoking jacket guys are really good at their jobs. Like they're great on the show, but I don't care about the plots they're in, which is really
that makes tense sense.
Thing the whole time. Where it's like, okay, but be about a guy that does something cool. Come on.
I was thinking about this because there was one night like Nora was closing, and I was just like, oh, I'll just put something on TV while I watch dinner. And I, like, scrolled through Netflix, and I scrolled through HBO Max, and I scrolled through Amazon Prime, and I'm like, no one's made a normal TV show in 15 years. No one's made a show that I just put on, and it's the same thing every week since the 2000s. You know?
Oh, my wife and child are gone this week, and I was like, what if I go back to the old me, just watching an episode of Futurama while I eat dinner?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
The one I keep thinking about is I want to rewatch Person of Interest.
I've seen a couple episodes of that, but I don't really remember the premise of it.
So it's like a 6-season CBS show, so it's like a full 23-episode run show. And it's John Caviezel, who has a lot of problems with John Caviezel, which I don't recommend the show. But he gets hired by the guy who played Linus in Lost. Because he made a computer that tells him when people are about to get hurt or die. So then he uses John Caviezel as like his Batman to go basically solve the crime that's about to happen. This computer's telling him it's going to happen. That's the premise of the show. And then the cops get involved. And then as it goes on, the machine starts developing into like something that's more than that. And then the government starts making its own machine. And then, yeah, it actually has the plot part's good because it just turns into like, it turns into, like, weird cyberpunk on CBS, because it's a Jonathan Nolan show.
Oh, sure.
But it also does a thing that no other show I've seen. It uses the fact that it's on CBS, and it has, like, a music budget to just have, like, a really good soundtrack a lot of the time. Like, they start using, like force markers in that show at some points.
Okay.
Yeah, like, they're using, like, Brian Eno tracks from Heat. Or, like, that kind of stuff in a CBS show, because they're having gunfights, because it's a CBS show for, like, it's, like, the best show for, like, dads that you could ever watch on TV. And there's a couple of gay girls that show up, and they start flirting with each other a lot. It's great.
Did they do... No, there was a Miami Vice movie around this time. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I was trying to think. That's a real good movie. Didn't they do a Miami Vice revival around?
Have you seen that movie?
Not since it was new. Not since like 2006. That was like the first Michael Mann movie I ever saw. But I was also like, you know, I was 10 in 2006, so I don't remember anything about it.
PI too, sorry, one last thing, is it's a, they can't show him actually killing anyone, So he shoots a lot of people in the knees with his guns. it's like a common running thing where he's like Batman in like that real way too, that he'll just like cripple people instead of actually killing them.
My favorite is Arrow, where in season one they're like, oh my gosh, we can do this show where he's killing people all the time, and so they just have Green Arrow killing people constantly in every episode, and then all of season two has to be about like seemingly like some focus test somewhere told them like, oh, we don't like it that he kills people so much, so all of season two has to be an arc about him realizing maybe killing people all the fucking time is bad. Arrow's such a delightfully stupid show.
I was gonna say, because I've been playing Atrian Odyssey, the HD version.
Yeah.
Because you got me all three of the like HD remakes on Steam because they were on sale for my birthday.
And I was annoyed because Atlas put the trilogy on sale for $40, but you couldn't gift the trilogy, so I had to I spend an extra $20 on your birthday present because Atlas didn't let me just gift you the bundle. I had to buy them each individually. Yeah. Not that that matters. Not that I'm like, oh, now you owe me an extra $20 for my birthday present or anything. I'm just annoyed.
Yeah. But, and I was like, oh, it's been a really long time since I've played, like, original Atrian Odyssey. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm gonna play that again, and, like, I'll just kind of periodically work through the Atrian Odyssey games, and I'll do, like, these three, right? And I'll just start at the beginning. And I forgot how much... because I think of Atrian Odyssey as having, like, some really good classes that just interact with each other. There's also the whole drawing the map thing, which I'm just sickos for, but it is a little bit harder to do on Steam Deck, so I'm, like, automating a little bit more of it than I would on DS. I kind of forgot that, especially in the very first Atrian Odyssey, you have basically D&D classes. I pull up the list again of, like, Lanzknecht, that's just your, like, fighter. Right. Just like has swords and axes and can attack good. Survivalist, it's got a bow, it's a ranger. It's just a ranger. Protector, that's just the paladin. It's got like a little bit of healing stuff, it can protect other people. Also some like decent attack. The Dark Hunter is like kind of your war mage. It's like the one that's like a little bit outside of the standard D&D group. And is leaning a little bit more into like the specific systems they have here around like debilities or whatever. Mm-hmm. The medic is a cleric, specifically more so than like even a white mage, of like if you build your medic correctly, you have them in the front row and they are doing damage as well.
Right.
The alchemist is just your wizard.
Okay.
Or sorcerer or whatever, your magic user class. And troubadour, can you guess what that one is?
It seems like maybe a bard.
Yeah, then maybe like play some songs that like will give bardic inspiration to the group so that they'll attack better or they'll get healed or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
And it does just mean that the classes aren't like getting as like weird as into how they like meld together as later ones, but it's still fun. But,
yeah.
It's a little bit more of like, oh, this is just like D&D classes and like normal party composition balancing, and not like, oh, these two classes actually have like really good synergy because one of them is going to be able to like set up these abilities or whatever that the other one's going to be able to take advantage of, or, you know, stuff like that.
If I'm going to play one of these games, it'll probably be three, because I want to do the stuff with the princess where she's got like, you have to keep her at full health. That sounds fun.
Three is so good.
That sounds fun.
Three and four are probably my favorites, but three's got some really good classes. I think four has my favorite of just like the sickos class, which is the war mage one. The Dark Hunter is like the start of their sickos classes one, where they have like bondage gear on basically, and like they'll have like a whip or something, you know. I think the one in four is the one where it's like basically the like reaper, like you've got like a scythe and everything, but it just has some really cool abilities. So but yeah, three is also good. I'm looking forward to like moving through and like seeing it develop this time. So, in a way that I kind of did before, but like didn't, I feel like I didn't really have the like attachment to Atrian Odyssey until three. So,
sure.
Yeah.
I keep thinking about if I want to finish 00 or just watch, listen to the episodes.
from what I have heard, you just want to listen to the episode.
Yeah.
Because I'm 32 of 40 on Rose of Versailles, and I stopped 00 at like season 2, like right when it started.
You haven't seen like any season 2.
No, barely. Like the opening bits.
If you wanted to get back into it, just watch until Tyria dresses in drag at like a ball, and then it's like you've hit the pinnacle.
Okay.
It's all downhill from there. You'll have my king, Regine. You will have met him / her / question mark. I love Regine so much. Voiced by Romy Park, so in the third to last episode, does just in a way that like, because Romy Park also does Laurent, and I would say that like Regine's voice is more Laurent for a lot of second season, but towards the very end where he's revealing his master plan or whatever, there's a part where Romy Park just does the Nana like extremely boisterous cute laugh immediately into bitchy voice, and I was like, oh, Nana's here. Nana's laughing, everyone shut the fuck up. Romy Park's Nana laugh is like fantastic. One of the best parts about watching the anime instead of reading the manga. Because in general I'd say just read the manga, but if someone wants to watch the anime, they can watch the Nana anime and then just make sure you pick up the manga from where it stops.
Yeah. Where does the anime stop?
Oh, the very first time skip with the fireworks,
Okay, but
when the fireworks are rescheduled.
But where does it stop in the present time frame? Or the 2001? Well,
the same plot thing of like there's the whole fireworks festival that gets rescheduled, and then like you know, Nobu doesn't open the door when Hachi comes. And then Hachi calls on the phone and like it goes and they're all in disguise. Shin's dressed in drag.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then there's the like time skip stuff as well. I mean, I think the final episode opens on like Satsuki and the butterfly and Hachi in the yukata.
Okay.
But
podcast?
Yeah. I mean, we're podcasting, but I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight o'er the ramparts we so gallantly streaming in the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air gave proof through the night that our flag was still there. Oh, say does that star-spangled banner yet wave o'er the
Hamburger. I really like the visuals for that one. I really like the visuals. I feel like they just showed really, you know, everything that America is all about, especially that last one at the end.